You are encountering the 4 month sleep regression. Good job. It's right where you should be. And what I like to tell people that there's actually a biological, partially, there's a biological reason for this, and that is that the gland in the brain that produces melatonin doesn't really turn on until 4 months when we are in utero.
Hi, I'm Sarah Kuhn. Welcome to the Juna Moms Podcast, where I sit down for candid conversations with women who are experts in their field and share their specific knowledge so we can become better equipped to handle all things motherhood. Juna Moms is an extension of Juna, a fitness and nutrition app created to help guide you through your trying to conceive, pregnancy, and motherhood journey. Today, I'm talking with Jessica Schaefer, a pediatric sleep expert and educator. Our conversation today is focused on sleep from the 4 to 12 month range. We have done episodes on newborn sleep, but there's a lot that changes as baby starts to move out of that infant stage, and we cover it all on today's episode. I hope you enjoy. Jessica, I'm so excited to have you back on the podcast today, so thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you. It's good to be back here.
Yeah, so last time we were talking about play therapy, but you also have a whole other component of your business, which is focused around sleep consulting. And many of our listeners here have young kids. And so I figured we would tap into you and get them some answers that I know a lot of them have.
Great. I know there are so many questions about sleep and it can be really broad. We're going to try and talk about 4 months to 12 months. And there's a lot that happens in that time. But you had someone that came on and talked about the newborn phase, which I moved to 4 months old. So 0 to 4 months old. There's certainly a lot to be done in that time. But also, we're just trying to survive. I think that there's this expectation that once the baby comes, and then we want to try and do everything right and get everything right. And sleep is one of those things that even during pregnancy, people get very nervous about. And I hear that I'm going to lose a lot of sleep, and how am I going to do the sleep thing? And so that 4 months, usually from my perspective, I'm like, you just survive. It is so true. Just sleep when the baby sleeps. There's a lot you can do, but also there's a lot that I don't want you to worry about.
Yeah. It's so funny. I feel like it kind of tells you you're not going to sleep, and you conceptually understand that you're not going to sleep because the baby – but you also don't understand what that means, and you also don't know what it means to be like perpetually for a long sustained period of time only getting 3 hour increments of sleep. Mm-hmm. And by the way, for those listening, that is totally normal. If you have a kid that's sleeping through the night at 6 weeks, like that is, you're so lucky. That is not a normal, that's like, wow, wonderful for you, but that's not a normal. So don't think you're doing something wrong if your kid is not sleeping through the night at 6 weeks or 2 weeks or whatever you're hearing your friends say. Yeah. So if you are coming to us now, definitely check out the newborn sleep episode because that has a lot of information. We're going to focus here from the 4 to 12 month range because, like Jessica said, there is a lot that happens from 4 to 12 months. With that said, let's kick off and talk about the 4 month sleep progression, regression, and kind of what's happening and how to best manage it both with naps and night sleep.
The 4 month sleep regression. Everybody calls it a regression because they were sleeping so well and now they're not. And then you can talk to some people who are like, it's not really a regression. It's actually a progression. This is exactly what they need to be doing. So if you are encountering the 4 month sleep regression, good job. It's right where you should be. And what I like to tell people that there's actually a biological, partially, there's a biological reason for this. And that is that the gland in the brain that produces melatonin doesn't really turn on until 4 months. When we are in utero, we are gathering all the melatonin from our birth mother. And so we have it on tap. We eat and sleep and poop and we do it all at the same time. And so when we come out as newborns onto this side, we just tap into that melatonin and go to sleep, which is why we see little babies sleeping at like concerts and they just sleep all the time. And sometimes people are like, oh, my baby sleeps and this is great. And then they start identifying with this idea, I have a good sleeper. And then 4 months comes around and it's, oh, no, I thought I did. And then now we have to deal with this like grief already because we're losing a story that my child was a good sleeper. But really, it's the body's way. It's like a slow kickstart. It doesn't just turn on and, oh, now I know when to release the sleep hormone and when not to. So it really is this, it is a rusty start for that brain to know when to release the melatonin. So that's part of the explanation. Knowing that helps us understand that when the baby is trying to get it to cue the melatonin and not, is it's taking all the cues from the environment mostly. So honestly, I have had some clients that say, all I needed to do was put in blackout shades. And if you're like, I can't afford blackout shades, or we have blackout shades, but let's lighten, get tinfoil and painter's tape and put it up and make it so black. Now, I know if you're still feeding in the middle of the night, which most people are at 4 months, get a little nightlight in there for you. So when you go in there to feed the baby, then you're not tripping over yourself. But know that when I was doing that, like at some point I was like, I think I could do this with my eyes closed anyway. So know that light is there for you and not for your little one. They really need to understand that light and dark is helping the brain know when to release the hormone. So that's part of what goes on in that 4 month sleep regression. The other part of that is that up until about 4 months, well, maybe I'll say it this way. In that 4 months, mom and dad, we also have a fair amount of adrenaline, right? Like new baby, we've got to pay attention. And we're like, we have enough, unless we're already totally sleep deprived before, maybe from another child or you just got a puppy or your job is super stressful or pregnancy was super hard and you weren't sleeping through pregnancy. So unless you're already coming in that way, most of us have some reserves we can tap into and that lasts us a while. So watching how your own body is responding in those first 4 months or so also is not quite indicative of the rest of your sleep life with child. So I think understanding that you run out and your body physiologically is trying to figure out how to sleep. So is babies at 4 months. So I think you're right. Go easy on yourself. If your newborn is sleeping, great. There's a good reason for that. If they're not, that's fine. If your 4 month is sleeping, that's great too. That means that they have found the rhythm maybe a little earlier on, and some of it is genetic. And if not, that's right where you should be.
We're going to take a quick break so I can tell you about the Juna app, the app that makes this podcast possible. Juna is the premier app for every stage of motherhood, with a 12-week trying to conceive plan and workouts, key nutrition information for every week of pregnancy and postpartum, plus 6 full video courses on birth prep, breastfeeding, newborn care, infant sleep, sleep from 4 to 12 months, and starting solids. The app is designed to be your number one companion from trying to conceive through your baby's first year of life. It also includes daily diaphragmatic breathing exercises, pelvic floor prep, daily tips, and notes from me that are relevant to the exact things you are experiencing. These are so helpful for easing any fears and preventing the dreaded gestational Google mania, that sickness where you can't stop Googling every little thing that happens during pregnancy. Juna is available for both iOS and Android. Just search Juna in the App Store or go to juna.co. Again, that's juna.co. The app is completely free to try for 7 days, and if you decide it's not right for you, you can cancel anytime within the first week. No questions asked. Download Juna today and get started. Now, back to the show. I get this question from friends all the time because I have been through the 4 month sleep regression with 3 different kids and all 3 of them handled it very differently. Mm-hmm. And I think like where it first shows up for some kids is, oh my God, my baby was taking 2-hour naps and now I can't, like now like it's 40 minutes and they're up and I can't get them like back to sleep. And that when you're like used to a schedule and you're on this napping schedule, then that all of a sudden throws off everything else because you're like, oh, because now like he can't be awake for this long and then I have to get him to without him getting overtired. And like you're doing a lot of mental gymnastics to deal with this now only getting 3, maybe 4 45 minute naps instead of 2 2-hour naps and like 2 1.5-hour naps, right? Like I distinctly remember that being all of a sudden me being like, now there's 6 naps because they're all 45 minutes and I have to stick to this like wake window. Mm-hmm. Do you have – because I obviously give my advice based on experience. I'm curious what you give your clients, what advice you give your clients for dealing with that?
It is so complicated. So usually there was something that you said in there. You said, I have to stick to these wake windows. Okay. So usually what I tell my clients is you don't have to do anything. You don't have to stick to a wake window. You don't have to stick to a schedule. What you want to look at is what is already working and what's not working. And we want to try to accommodate as much as we can. That being said, your first kid is going to look a lot different than your second, because now you have a second trying to manage your first, and as your third trying to manage two. And so it's like, we got to do daycare drop off and then this activity pick up, and okay, they can nap while we're sitting at soccer practice because I can wear them. So I would say that there's not a lot of have to's, but if we understand that there's only so long that the body and brain can stay awake before it needs to recharge, then we and eat, right? There's certain things that we have to do separately on this side. In utero, we can do it all at the same time. When we are on this side, we start to have to do it separately. So eating and sleeping. So I like to look at the eating and sleeping and how they dance together. Now, I'm not a lactation consultant. I do work very closely with a feeding specialist who can help determine if your baby's getting enough to eat, how they're eating, how much energy they're putting into eating, as long as they're digesting well, all those things. But they do dance together, because our bodies are really like this. I like to think of them as an engine. We're eating to refuel, and we're resting also to refuel. So we have to figure out, what's the rhythm? When do I eat? When do I sleep? When do I eat? And a lot of this is hormonal driven. Like I said before, like melatonin is that says go sleep. And then there's the hunger hormone that says go eat. And then there's another hormone that says stop eating, you're full. So all these things are trying to learn how to dance together. I loved your mental gymnastics, because that's what it feels like. Sometimes you're like, wait, what? Who's sleeping and who's eating? And I don't know if that ever stops as motherhood, right? Are you still doing mental gymnastics? Me too. Yeah. So I would say that looking at eating and sleeping together. So look for a rhythm, less like time, at least at 4 months. At 4 months, we want to still be in this idea of, I like to follow baby wise as much as I can, at least with the idea that there is a rhythm and a flow, that we sleep, we wake up, we eat, we play, we sleep. And honestly, I think adults should follow that too. So many of us are eating at 10 o'clock at night, and then we go to sleep and we're like, why don't I sleep very well? Or we stay out really late and we have a glass of wine at dinner, and then we're like, why am I not sleeping? It's because really you should be eating breakfast and not your third dinner at night. Look for that flow, especially at that 4 months. And can you implement that? And whether or not they take a 40-minute nap or a 20-minute nap, for them at that age, it doesn't really matter. They don't look at the clock. That's our own story of how we are like, no, but the book says they should be sleeping for at least 45 minutes, because that's a full sleep cycle. I don't know. I just see so much more variance in reality. So to hold someone to that standard tends to give them a lot more anxiety than it does confidence in their baby's sleep.
Yeah. It's interesting, because even as you're saying it, I'm like feeling my body want to resist that, because I'm like, no, but shouldn't you like hold the baby, try to rock them back to sleep to extend the sleep? Like, that's like my instinct, because I'm like, if they were getting 2 hours of sleep, now they're not getting 2 hours of sleep. And to your point, I think it's part of the story in my head of, and especially as someone who, I mean, around 4 months, like if you're lucky, you probably have maternity leave and you might just be going back to work. And so it might not be your problem during the day. Right. And so you might be seeing this show up at night. And this is when you get a lot of the waking, like every hour, looking for their pacifier, whatever it is. And so do you have advice then for these night wakes?
So usually I start with bedtime in all my clients. I say, let's look at how is bedtime going, partially because 9 times out of 10, it is you. So whether you have daytime care or you are going back to work, maternity leave, and bedtime is always going to be
always you. Yeah.
You. Or I should say it ought to be, right? Like, I hope that it is you, and that you are able to have that closure with your kids in throughout the day and that you wake with them also. I know we can't always do that, but that ideally that bedtime, how that is built is the foundation for so many things. Some of that is sleep and the sleep environment, but some of it is just building lifetime habits of connection. How we reunite and how we say goodbye are foundational for attachment, any sort of attachment. And we want those to be held very tenderly. Mm-hmm. So saying goodnight is our biggest goodbye. We are trusting that when we fall asleep, that we will be safe throughout the night and that we will wake up. Otherwise, like, we just have to check out and we get very vulnerable. So building a nice transition from, I like to start at dinner time, whatever mm-hmm. dinner time is to your family. It could be the child's dinner time. At some point, it likely will become a family dinner time. But how do we move from dinner time all the way to a sleep time? And there are certain markers in there that I like to hold as like just goals. So if bedtime routine happens, starts at, I'm just going to say, let's say it starts at 5:30. Dinner's at 5, bedtime routine starts at 5:30. And then we move through a bedtime routine that looks one way at 4 months. It's going to change probably around 9 months. And then it changes, it evolves through until that 12 months. And then of course, you know, into years, like, oh, they don't want to be rocked to sleep, or you're not going to be giving them a bottle at bedtime, but pretty soon they're going to want you to read to them. And then they're going to want to read to themselves. But bedtime routines still exist even into adulthood. So mm-hmm. really paying attention and teaching them that this bedtime routine is important to allow our bodies to fall asleep. So to have the expectation, as we do when they're so little, that we just kind of go about our life and then they like fall asleep in the car, or we go about our life and then they like fall asleep and then we put them in the bed. That works for the first 4 months. But then after that, they really need this transition time for bedtime and awake time. I think we overlook morning time a lot generally in our culture, but I do think looking at bedtime is key. And once you do that, then you can start looking at middle of the night.
So from 4 to 9 months, what would you say is a ideal like bedtime routine? What does that look like to you? Sure.
One of the things that I like to implement that a lot of people don't do is recognizing the transition from the main part of the house to the sleeping part of the house. So what I like to say is, so let's say 5:30 is you start bedtime routine. And so you kind of, there's like this announcement that happens. Okay, guys, let's get ready for bed, right? Mm-hmm. But with a little baby, you're going to, there is still an announcement. Okay. Oh, I see that you're sleepy, or, oh, it's time to go to bed. So you're going to walk them through literally that we're leaving. Okay. Good night, living room. Good night, main part of the house. And you're going to make your way to the bathroom first. This will play out as your children get older and you have to go potty and take a bath or wash your hands or brush your teeth. The idea is that we say goodnight to three things, and they're three stationary things that are always there. So like a fish tank or a picture on the wall or the mirror or the tree out the window, the three things that really help say goodnight. So like the
night moon book.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what I was going to say. But it's the same kind of thing every night to the bathroom. And mm-hmm. I would stop in the bathroom. If you bathe every as a baby, that's fine. You're probably going to want to enforce bathing every night as they get older, or else then all of a sudden your kids aren't bathing for a week and you're like, wait, what happened? So bathing every night is a good habit to be in. If anything, you're just washing hands. Take a little washcloth, wash their hands, wipe their face. Of course, if they have teeth, your dentist is going to say brush their teeth, even when they're just too little. Blinkers in there. So do all of those things and then move to the room that they're going to be sleeping in. I do suggest massage or some sort of infant massage. It does not have to be technically infant massage. And there's a billion YouTube videos. I'm sure you can find whatever you need to find on there for it. But there is a centering that has to happen for you and for your baby. And there's this element of touch. We know that touch is one of the main elements of soothing our nervous system. So whether we are being touched or we are touching something, that's a real key there for touching. And you're also very close. Usually the changing table is up pretty high for when they're this little, and you're very close. So pretty close to as if you're nursing them and your face is right here, like you're not very far from them. So it's a pretty mm-hmm. intimate time. And then I would dress them. I love swaddles. I think swaddles are great. Some people are like, no, my baby hates the swaddle. That's okay. Sometimes it depends on the age or what's going on with them, but sometimes I would really work with it to say, well, let's see if we can really move past that and get them into a swaddle. Sometimes it's, oh, your baby doesn't like a swaddle. We'll just drop it and move on. I do love sleep sacks. I like sleep sacks basically until they stop wearing them.
My 2-year-old's still on a sleep sack.
Totally. Five.
Does not contain him, but he still wears it because he can't keep a blanket on him. So.
Totally. Most kids can't keep a blanket on until they're about 5. And even then, I'll still walk into my 10-year-old's room and you're freezing. Your blanket is all the way on the other side of the room. So sleep sacks are great. And it also helps with crawling out of the crib too early, taking off the diaper in the middle of the night in protest. Mm-hmm. So sleep sacks are great. And then this is different for everybody. This is where there is some change here that tends to happen, especially if you're feeding them to sleep, if you're feeding the baby to sleep or feeding them until they are asleep. This is where I would encourage starting to make some space in between the feeding and the sleeping so that the baby isn't getting used to eating while falling asleep. Mm-hmm. That they are going to want to eat then, or the action of eating. They might not be hungry, but they need the action of eating in the middle of the night to help them go back to sleep or back mm-hmm. to nap even. But then there's a moment where you'll feed them while they are awake. And then you do this mama bounce. We all have this way that we would hold our babies and bounce to the side of the crib. Mm-hmm. And then you kiss them and there's some sort of parting words. Good night. I love you. I'll see you in the morning. Or some people say a little blessing or a prayer, and then they put them in the bed, and in the ideal world, which is possible, and some people are like, no way this is possible, you put your baby down and you walk out, good night, I love you, and you walk out of the room and you don't see them till morning. There is a long road to get there, but that mm-hmm. is possible. That does happen, and it can happen in an attached way. It does not have to necessarily mean a whole lot of tears. Not that tears are bad, we can talk about that later, but it is possible. So this good night routine, I would say, does last probably through the first year and maybe beyond that. The only thing that I would include in there is reading. Mm-hmm. We often in this culture know that reading aloud to our children is really beneficial from an educational point of view. But there's also something to be said about reading a wholesome chapter book. I think when they're so little, they don't want to read Goodnight Moon. They don't see the pages yet. So I would encourage you to read things like Charlotte's Web, The Little Prince, mm-hmm. Winnie the Pooh. These are all things that have, the way that they are written is so that your voice is continuous and a bit melodic. Mm-hmm. Child's used to hearing your voice and it's a continuous song if you're not super into singing, but it helps them to understand story and their audio learning. And you can that part can carry on
forever.
Yeah,
they don't want to hear from you.
I would love it if someone read to me, right? So that that does change. Those pieces evolve throughout the bedtime routine, but the routine still exists. So we can, if they start not wanting the massage at night, then maybe they're over it and you can change it to something else.
Let's be honest. One of the hardest and most unexpected things about postpartum was feeding myself nutritious foods. Between trying to figure out my baby's sleep and feeding schedule, trying to keep the house in working order, trying to keep myself bathed and functioning, there was very little extra time to go grocery shopping or to do meal planning and go cook for myself and the family. Enter Home Chef. They have simple and delicious meals for every day of the week. You can choose between the oven-ready meals, which I highly recommend, especially in the early postpartum period, to ready in 15 minutes. The meals are healthy, easy to make, and make the cleanup process easy peasy lemon squeezy. Use the coupon code JUNA115 to get $35 off your first box, $30 off the second box, $25 off the third and fourth boxes. Trust me, this will make your life 1 million times easier when you don't have to think about feeding yourself and your family. Once again, go to homechef.com, pick your meals, and use the coupon code JUNA115 to get $115 off your first 4 boxes. Enjoy! And then you mentioned it, and so I do want to talk about it. What do you think the morning routine should look like? Because I don't think that I've ever been told that. We have one, but I'm just curious what an ideal one would look like.
What an ideal. I think it varies more per family and whether or not you are a morning person anyway. So I certainly have a morning routine for myself now. And then my children also have a morning routine, as we have to, they have to wake up before their natural clock wakes them up at this point. But when they're babies, typically they're going to wake up. A lot of times they're waking up before you want them to wake up. But yeah, if they're not, and you do have to wake them, the idea here is that it is a very distinct difference between I'm coming in here to check on you because you're awake and I need to tend to you in the middle of the night versus it's morning time. Good morning. And when you approach them, whether they're like happy in their bed, hanging, or even if they're upset in their bed, but now it's morning time, to be able with your voice and your body language really distinctually say, good morning, it's morning time. And then you open up the natural light. You want to get natural light in there as much as you can. Now in winter months, for those of us who are far north, it's dark in the morning. It is really dark. And so it's hard. So turning on lights, you don't have to turn on the overhead light right away, but start turning on lights that says this is morning time. I typically like dressing. You basically reverse your bedtime routine. I like dressing first, and then you stop in the bathroom, brush your teeth, wash your hands, and then you go and eat right away. Okay. So that eating right away, I think, is key. When we tend to linger and play and then we eat, but then it's like nap time. So really letting the body know, wake up, eat, wake up, eat, wake up, eat. That's what a morning routine looks like. You can incorporate, we used to call it morning milk eventually. This probably started around 10, 11, 12 months, where I knew that I could bring them into bed and we're not all going to fall back asleep. Like all the windows are open and it's fine. But we would come in and I would nurse, and even so I would nurse them. And then when I had a son, he would get his morning milk. I would nurse my daughter. And then in my ideal world, my husband's bringing me a cup of coffee. Like that, I can't guarantee that part, but that's like the ideal, right? So we all get like this morning snuggle our connection deal. Time, yeah. Right? Exits, good nights, and reuniting, good morning. Those are the two bookmarks. And those can form our relationships throughout our day and throughout our life, really. They're such amazing habits to be in.
Now, there was a period, and I think it was like 8 months to like 15, 16 months with my first son. It was different for everybody, but we went through a bunch of different phases. And especially when we started sleep training, my daughter, I remember, we started getting these early morning wakes, like before or they should be getting up. So in the fives, right? We can get to it later, but I'm currently having that with my 2-year-old right now. The moment we like transitioned him out of his crib because he was climbing out with his sleep sack. And I was just like, okay, this is getting dangerous. Now we've tried holding on for 6 months and now he's just, so we transitioned him out. And now every morning between 5 and 5:30, he's up and like ready to go. I bring that up because you will be dealing with sleep until I don't know if you're still dealing with sleep at 10, but I know that occasionally when my 6-year-old is sick, like we will be dealing with sleep stuff. Now I have a 2-year-old who was sleeping through the night, sleeping until 6:30, 7. Now he's up at between 5 and 5:30 every day. So that definitely happens in the first year too. Like you might be having a kid that's sleeping 7 to 7 and then all of a sudden, or they're sleeping, they're doing like one wake at 4 and then they're sleeping again until 7. And then like you finally get that middle of the night sleep or nursing session out and then they're waking up much earlier. How do you deal with that in that first year?
One thing actually that I would say is almost prescriptive is when someone says, I had a baby who was sleeping till 6:30 and now all of a sudden we're waking at 5. What's going on? Without changing anything in the middle of the night. Sometimes that does if you're dealing with eating and dropping, eating and being hungry, things like that. But almost otherwise, I would say that they're probably going to bed too late, or that window between their last nap and bedtime is too long. And which is counterintuitive for us as adults, because we know that if we go to bed early, we can wake up earlier feeling better. Or if we go to bed late, we really want to sleep in the next day. And that tends to start to show up around 5 or 6, where we start to compensate for our sleep in a 1 increment. Whereas for infants, and especially in the first year, there have been few studies done on actual human babies that we can ethically do. And so one of them is that if they go to bed earlier, they will sleep later. it's so, as adults, we are like, wait, what? I mean, I can wrap my brain around it now, but intuitively, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But the idea here is that when they go into sleep, when any of us go into sleep, we tend to drop into sleep in these certain levels. And when we fall into sleep too fast because we're too tired, right? We're crashing. We skip all, it's so disorganized. There's no order to it. And so when we come back out of sleep, there's no order to that either. And so we go whoosh, like way back up, awake, alert. So there are two red flags that tell me that they're usually overtired most of the time. And that's when it's that like false start. Oh, like I went and I put them to bed at 7:00. And then at 8:30, they're like awake screaming. Wait, what? So that's that like whoosh coming out really fast. And then early morning wakes too, is that they'll fall into sleep, but not so deep where they are really cycling through these deep sleeps. They'll go down into more of a shallow sleep. They'll cycle, but at a lower level, so that when they get restless in those early morning hours, they'll come all the way back awake, but they're not tired enough anymore. We call it sleep pressure to fall all the way back asleep again until 7:00. So we want them to stay in these like lower. And if they do come up, stir, which we all do, but then they go all the way back down so that it just keeps them there longer. They become restless, but instead of restless at 0, they come restless at 2. And so that they could stay at 2 and then eventually they come out. And the idea is that when they wake, it's a rising, not a alert. Come awake now. So those two things are telling me that wake window is too long. Now, the interesting thing about the age, when is your son's birthday?
He's June. So he's almost 2.5.
Okay. So this cool thing happens at 2.5. It's imagination. We may have talked about this in the last podcast, actually. Oh, we didn't? Okay, so the 2.5, the imagination starts to grow. It's awesome. All of a sudden, the brain's ability to grab onto the abstract is awesome. This is when things like fairies become awesome and magic. They start to get magic, like magic tricks and things like that. Santa Claus becomes really big. And that idea of awe and wonder, this is also a huge, at least in my experience, a point of spiritual growth. Because we start to understand there's an intangible world out there. Mm-hmm. And it's not all, here's the ball, and now I'm making the ball go under the blanket, and now you can't see it. Or here it is, and now it's gone. Very concrete when they're much younger. But at 2.5, and I know we're only supposed to be talking about till 12 months, but here we are talking about 2.5.
Here we are.
and so what starts to happen is the imagination is going. And so the dream life starts to go. So nightmares start to happen and being afraid of the dark starts to happen and don't need, ideally they keep a nap until 3 and then drop the nap somewhere between 3 and 4, but they start to need it less and less, but they might really like the nap. So they're sleeping way more in the day, but we still want them to go to bed at 7, but they're not falling asleep until 9 because they're not tired. Or like, they do fall asleep at 7 because they have great habits, but they also sleep for 2.5 hours in the day. So
up at 5.
They don't need to sleep until 7. Yeah. So they're just trying to figure out where and how much sleep they need. But 2.5 is a big milestone in the sleep world for sure.
I will say, just because this cracks me up that you brought up the word imagination, my son who's 6, he the other night, and he's done this a couple of times, but it just made me laugh the other night. He comes downstairs and I've been hearing him walking around his room. He's clearly not sleeping. He's been up there for a half an hour. He comes downstairs and he knows he's not supposed to come out of his room. So he's always got an excuse. And he's, "Mommy, I had a nightmare." And I was like, "How can you have a nightmare? You weren't asleep." No. And he's like, "Mom, haven't you ever heard of an imagination?" It's just like, yes, that is exactly. So he was like, "Oh, I wasn't sleeping, but I was thinking of really scary things." And thinking of really scary things is the same thing.
Totally.
Like, good point, bud. All right. Yeah. Taken. Message.
Very wise. Oh, yes. They're so smart. Kids are smart. Yeah. And it is that imagination, like scared of monsters and when those things start to get out of, so those, all of those things are normal for the kids like that. But when we start seeing even older, right? Then it's, oh, are these now intrusive thoughts? Or, so there, we learn how to modulate our imagination and have some sort of insight and wisdom and control over our imagination for most people. And when we don't, that's when things become disordered, hence the whole field of psychology. So yes, I would say that, but it's a cool place to be from a kid's at that age. And like this is when they start pretending that they're kitty cats and bunny rabbits, and you get to play mama kitty and I'll play baby kitty. And that's where they are. And they really think that they're kitty, and they are good kitties. Like, they're really good at it. Go with it, but it can interrupt sleep. And if you know that's why it's interrupting sleep, I think it also softens us, builds a little bit of empathy and compassion for them and for ourselves. So you're not like, why aren't you in bed? This is so frustrating. I will say, if we go back to the age group of the early rising, besides that pattern of they're going to bed too late, some of it is, are they waking at 5 and they're just like hanging out? Or are they waking at 5 and they're screaming? That's, we would want to look at, what's their behavior? What are they actually trying to tell us? So if they're just waking at 5 and they're hanging out, let them hang out. Mm-hmm. Although I would not change their nap time. So I don't want you to do too much mental gymnastics around, they woke up at 5. And so now their nap is normally at 9, but they woke up at 5. So they must be so tired at 7:30. So I'm going to let them nap at 7:30. Now the rest of your day, you're going to be like doing math, math. Yeah. So I would say that keeping the eating and sleeping times, when you're offering food and you're offering sleep, and that's all they are actually, is just an offering. You cannot make them eat. You cannot make them sleep. Can't really make them poop without medicine. But what we do is we set up the environment for them to do what their body is designed to do. They want to sleep. They want to eat. Even the people who are like, the parents out there who are like, oh, my baby just fights sleep. They fight sleep. That might be true. There's like a part of them that's like, sleeping is uncomfortable. Sleeping is scary. There's a part of them that is fighting sleep, but biologically, at the heart of it, they want to sleep. Mm-hmm. So how do we help them get to that really biological thing?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And so I don't know how you typically work with your clients, but do you have like, when your baby is 4 months, this is how frequently they should be napping, when how they drop naps? Because there's a lot, I feel like there's, in that first year, you go from many naps to 5 to 4. Mm-hmm. And then I think it's been a long time since I had a newborn or a 4 to 12 month old, but I feel like from 4 to 12 months, you go from 4 naps to 2 naps. And then you're on the 2 naps until some kids are until 18 months, right? Like depending on like your daycare and whatnot. But I remember being very stressed out. I think it was 8 months, like dropping from 3 to 2. That was a challenge. That I feel like that nap drop was really hard because, again, the mental gymnastics of trying to get the weight so you don't have an overtired baby for bedtime, but getting those 2 naps to be long enough. And so do you have – and again, this was different for all of my babies. Like some of my babies did their naps at – I think it was like 10 and 2. Mm-hmm. And then one of my babies did his nap from at 9 and 1. Mm-hmm. And then I remember working with a sleep consultant and she was just like, it should be 9 and 1 because like eventually you'll just drop that – first nap and the nap will be at 1. But I feel like most of my kids ended up napping from like 12 to 2:30. And so for those listeners, I think like these things are all over the place. And I think nothing's rigid and it's more about what works for you and your family and your kid. But in your experience, is there an ideal kind of like nap time and schedule for these babies and their rhythms? And
sure. So I don't do a whole lot with that newborn 0 to 4 months. I'll do a lot more once they are 4 months. And by the time people are calling me, they're a mess, or they wouldn't be calling me. And so they're all over the place and habits have been formed, some good, some bad. And so I actually try to say, so log it, right? Raw data is the best thing to work with. So don't drive yourself crazy over it. Like, I get logging is stressful in and of itself. I get that. But do it for 3 days. Log when they are asleep, when they are in bed, when they are awake, and when they are out of bed, and kind of whichever order that happens. And ideally, they are in bed, and then they are asleep, and then they are awake, and then they are out of bed. So that's the ideal order. When you log it for 3 days, you see what natural flow is already going on for your kiddo, right? Some kids are 6 to 6, some are 7 to 7, some are 8 to 8. One of my best friends, they all were like ER doctors and firefighters and work night shifts. And so their kids were 9 to 9. And that's what worked for their family. That's just how they all flowed. So see what's already flowing for them. Then you can use your wake windows as a guide, knowing that not every wake window is going to be the same amount of time. So generally, we can say 1.5 to 2 hours is really the max for each wake window, but eventually that changes. So the first wake window tends to be the shortest, and then the second window is a little longer, and then the third wake window is the longest of them at this age that you're talking about. See what's already there, and then just pencil in, like use a pencil, because you will erase it and start over at some point, but use a pencil and just say, okay, I think typically in this culture, 6:30 to 6:30 is like average or normal. So you would go 6:30 to 6:30, which would lend itself more to a 9 and 1 situation. Some kids sleep till 7, and then you get like a 10 and 2 situation, just exactly what you had. And when we say, at least when I say 6:30 to 6:30, that's 6:30 first feed, 6:30 last feed. And I use, so it's not like falling asleep at 6:30 or waking up at 6:30. I use the feeding times as that because I have more control over when I offer food and when they take it, because usually they're better at taking food when you offer it than taking a nap when you offer it. So I try to use those benchmarks. So there's not really, this is typical. So use your child as the guide, but then you get to say, okay, given that's what your preference is, and given that this is what I need you to be doing, here's how we can make it so that it's working for everyone in the family. Like sometimes, like you can't nap at 1 because I have preschool pickup at 1. So either you're napping in the car or you're just going to have to nap when we get home. So now you have a 9 and 2 o'clock. I will say that dropping from 3 naps to 2 naps is tricky. So think of the first 2 naps as those are the stationary naps, stationary and horizontal. The third nap, that's your cat nap. That's your like, that's what I would consider, oh, I don't know, just have chicken nuggets for dinner. Like you did the best you could all day. And by the end, you're like, this is all I got. So I'm going to offer it to you and hope that you take it. So for a long time, that third cat nap is just, it's there if you need it, but if you don't, then fine. So the first nap we like to say is the mentally, restorative. And the second nap is physically restorative. So that first nap is really, it's still integrating everything that they're learning intellectually. And then that second nap is because ideally in that window is when you're doing swim class and tummy time and gymnastics and all the things that you want to be out in the world doing. So physically they're very tired. And then that third cat nap is just because they can't get to bedtime. They just need a little pick me up. And 10 to 20 minutes is really all you need a lot of the time. And it can be on the move. Put them in the carrier, take them to soccer practice, go to the grocery store, put them in the cart and do all your groceries that way. But it can be light out. It can be noisy. But the other 2 naps, those are the restorative, deeper naps. And those are the ones that we want to be 45 minutes to 1.5 hours. And then dropping. When she said, oh, you'll drop the nap at 9, so then you'll be napping at 1. I'm like, oh, I wish it were that simple. I've never encountered it being that simple.
It wasn't that simple. It was not that simple.
Yeah, it's logical. It's totally logical. And in some ways, that's what's happening. They typically drop that first nap and then the second nap scoots forward like yours did to like sometimes even as early as 11:30.
That was what it was for a long time.
Kids can either favor the morning nap or the afternoon nap eventually. And that typically going from 2 naps to 1 nap can start, you start seeing it around 13, 14 months. But you can be in a two nap, one nap
juggle
for a while until sometimes even up until 2 years old. So if you feel like your child's dropping their second nap before 12 months old, resist it, find a way to
play with the times.
Yeah. And do something, because we really, two naps is still, you still want them doing two naps at 12 months.
Yeah. It's, I even feel like I'm glad that you brought up how you could, because I think you can also be in limbo with that 3 to 2 for a while too. Oh, yeah. Cause there are some days that your child's just, it's absolutely, I'm not taking this third nap. And it's, mm-hmm. it is really stressful as a mom. Like, you're like, oh, I was going to get dinner. I was going to, like, whatever mm-hmm. I had, to, whatever you were going to do. And I found that I was much more graceful with myself, with my second kid, with the expectations of those nap transitions and being like, you cannot control this. And it is what it is. And I was like, I relied so much on the carrier. Yeah. Because I was just like, you know what? It's fine. Like, I have another kid at this point who I'm juggling. And so if she naps, but I would be going upstairs trying to get Luca to do that third nap in his crib with like all the, and he just like wouldn't want to take it. And I would spend 2 hours just trying to get him down for the nap. And I'm like, why mm-hmm. am I doing this? This is so stressful. That was a long limbo. And I feel like if I had expectations over it.
Again, it's that part of it is all about our own story. And like, this is, I have a good sleeper, or I have a kid who naps every day at 3 o'clock. They change. And then you're like, no, wait, that's not my kid. And then we have to let go of that idea and accept where they are now. But, and that can be a different process for everyone, especially given whatever behavior it is. We all have to grieve over certain behaviors that like, oh, I guess I'm just, my kid's not the soccer kid, or my kid's not the...
Yeah.
In my world, it's all rock climbing. My kid's not going to want to go rock climbing with me. But that was the dream. So anyway, so we all.
You can have Levi. He will.
Oh, okay. Great. He can come anytime. So I feel like the main message here is knowing that the only thing we can really control is the environment that we provide for them, our behavior in that, what we're doing, and how we're offering. And it's just an offering. And I think I'm still using that. We're offering and we're allowing. And all of that's boundary setting. I think a lot of sleep stuff comes up because it's the first time, especially if you're for your first child, mm-hmm. it's the first time we have to set a boundary with our kids. And that where we actually get to show up as moms or parents. Mm-hmm. Okay, really know that you want to wake up every hour and nurse, but I don't want to do that. So now what do we do? Because for 4 months, you would have moved heaven and earth for that baby, mm-hmm. as we probably should. But at some point we can't. And so we have to start coming into actually relationship where it's back and forth.
Yeah.
And so that while a lot of the coaching that I do for parents around sleep is very much sleep, the practicalities of sleep, the subtleties of it are all about boundary setting and relating and co-regulation and
Yeah. It's funny. We did a whole podcast on like 4 months to 12 months, and we didn't touch at all on any sort of like sleep training.
Oh, yeah.
And it's funny because it's typically in that first year that you're like from, mm-hmm. I would say 5 months to mm-hmm. 12 months is when people are like, this isn't mm-hmm. working for us.
That's if we went back and listened to it, we've been talking about sleep training the whole time.
Yes.
Just
yes.
not in the context the of where it's, oh, sleep training, I have to like, do the Ferber method or cry it out, or we could do a whole podcast just on those kinds of things. But the reality is that the training part, the teaching part is these are good sleeping habits. So this is a good sleep routine. This mm-hmm. is how we fall asleep, how we say goodbye. This is how we wake up. This is how we reunite. Mm-hmm. This is how I can set a boundary in order to train you, sleep train, or teach you, or be with you. That's all sleep. Then there's potty training. And then there's how do you do your own laundry? And how do you ride a bike? It's the same thing. It just starts with sleep because it's such a fundamental part of our life.
Yes. And it's so funny because it starts there because it also, like whether my kid rides a bike or not isn't going to impact my daily life. But how my kid sleeps is probably the difference.
It's the only thing because even how they eat, we want to make
emotionally sure will be stressful, but not physically.
It doesn't necessarily impact what I eat. I'll still eat what I need to eat. But sleep is the one place where it's, that is it. And then it does get, I think, a little more subtle in like how we talk to each other and how do we touch each other, right? Are we hitting a lot or are we snuggling a lot? And what does that look like? But those two places are, it hits so close to home because we have to really be able to stand up for ourselves and advocate for them at the same time.
So yeah, it's good practice to do that at 5 months because you're going to be doing it, I feel like, for the rest of your life.
Yeah, totally. You do it at 5 months. I think we do it in labor, pregnancy, labor, delivery. We're doing it a little more subtly. But yeah, once that sleep piece comes in, it's really poignant.
Yes. This was such a fun discussion. So I appreciate you coming on. It's so funny. I'm like, man, it seems so long ago. I have a good friend she's about to have her fourth kid. Our first three are the same age. And I'm like, oh, you're going to be right back in it. I cannot imagine. And I swear the whole time I'm just thinking about her. I'm like, this will be relevant for her again.
Yes, it will be. And even more so, you're like, well, I can offer. And if you don't take it, then it's going to have to be okay because I have other things and other people that need tending to. So yeah, each kid is so different and so there aren't exact rules. There aren't exact rules, but
yeah. Thank you so much. This was wonderful.
Thank you.
Okay. Oh, why don't you just tell people where they can find you?
Oh, sure. You can find me on my website, shuteyecounseling.com. And there you can book calls. You can send me an email, but I would love to hear from you and at least chat a little bit. I work with kids 4 months to 10 years old. So after that, they want to go to someone else.
Perfect. Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, that's all for today. If you liked today's episode, please share it with a mama friend and leave us a review. If you're pregnant, postpartum, or trying to conceive, you can download the Juna app completely free for 7 days. The app is available for iOS and Android and is designed to be your guide for all things health and fitness for this very special time of your life. If you have any suggestions for episodes you would like to hear or anyone you think would be a great guest on the show, please email me directly at sarah@juna.co. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next week.